It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, the new podcast, Mid-Americana, Stories from a Changing Midwest, will introduce listeners to some notable Iowans and also break down some stereotypes about our region. I'll talk with creators Brian Campbell and Josh Dolezal of Central College. But first, Robert Wolfe fell in love with rocks as a kid. He grew up and made his living as a writer. He was a correspondent for the Des Moines Register for 27 years, but he never lost his passion for rocks, and more specifically, fossils. He's a self-taught geologist, and over the last 55 years, he has amassed a huge collection, which he has now donated to the University of Iowa, 18,000 specimens. In just a moment, I'll talk with Tiffany Adrain, collections manager for the Paleontology Repository at the University of Iowa. But let's start with Robert Wolfe on the line with us from Fort Dodge. Hello, Robert.
Yes, hello, Charity. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Sure. Okay. No problem. So I enjoy it. So.
And let's go back in time to fourth grade when you first found out about fossils. Tell me what happened.
Okay. Well, actually, I had worked for the Fort Dodge Messenger, not the Des Moines Register. Oh. But anyway, I was in fourth grade, and a friend of mine showed me a fossil he found in his driveway, and crushed rock, and I didn't know anything about them. And he said, well, we've been talking about them in school. Well, I was never really a good student. So anyway, we started looking in the field between the houses and found a few fossils. And what he thought over was a brachiopod, which is a very common type of fossil, but first one I ever saw. And then we had a friend that actually took us down to the river, and there was a actual rock outcrop, and that was the first time I ever saw a rock outcrop. And we started collecting more marine fossils there, and actually, that was the first I ever went to, and over the years, kept going back there time and time again, and the place is still there. So when I'm able to, I still go down there and start collecting. So, and then I started numbering my specimens, and before I knew it, I was up to over 18,000 cataloged, and a lot more that weren't cataloged. So that's how I got started.
Right. And getting excited about fossils that young, I think a lot of people might think, well, why wouldn't you grow up to be a paleontologist for a living?
Right.
Why didn't you pursue that?
Well, just looking back upon it, I think, why would I have gone to school for 8 years and run up a student loan just to go collecting fossils? And so it was just basically a hobby, and I was into writing and things like that and stuff. And then out of high school, I got a job as an animal caretaker. And that's what I did for a living for 18 years before I started working for the newspaper. So,
wow.
And I really enjoy writing and wrote a couple books and stuff. And I used the fossil hobby to break into being an author. So
tell me how you educated yourself about fossils, because clearly you're incredibly knowledgeable.
Okay, well, a lot of it was just stuff I learned out in the field and in libraries and stuff. And I was, you know, always a book push, and, you know, other kids were involved in sports and stuff. And I would be down in the library or whatever, reading books on geology and fossils. And I had an earth science teacher in high school that taught me a lot about it, too. And for years, I belonged to the Geological Society of Iowa. And they put out field guides and went on field trip twice a year. And I probably got every publication they ever put out. And it was just self-taught, learned all that stuff on my own. And so that's how I learned about it. And now I'm on Facebook, and I learn about a lot of stuff through Facebook. And people are always contacting me either have me identify things, too, through Facebook. So
you've spent so many hours out in the countryside, in the wilderness, searching for fossils. How do you plan a fossil hunting trip?
Basically, I use those field guides or publications that have been out. And if there isn't anything, then I just go out and to an area of the state maybe I hadn't been before. And basically, my first thing is I travel the roads. Look for road outcrops along the roads and things, and then, you know, maybe along rivers and stuff. And most of it is just going through old publications, old books and things, and seeing what's there. I went on a field trip up north to Sioux City one time because I read about some fossils being found up there, and I went up there and got skunked. Didn't find anything, and talked to one of the old landowners. He said he'd been lived there for his whole life and didn't know anything about it. I found out the fossils were found in 1901. That's why there wasn't anything there anymore. So things change. So,
when you're looking for fossils, is there an approach that helps you spot them? Because a lot of people have hiked over this same territory and not seen the fossils that you're finding. What's your secret?
Well, I look for a little while, you know, on the surface of the rock and things. And if I don't see anything, I don't spend much time there. But after 15 or 20 minutes, if I start finding fossils, then I stick around for a while. And you just develop an eye for it. Like, I know people who've been out collecting arrowheads and artifacts and things like that and stuff. And I've been doing this for 55 years, and I have never found an arrowhead. So I think after a while, your eyes just grow accustomed to what you're looking for. And that's how I go about it. I just try on error.
And you mentioned cataloging the things that you find. What kind of information do you record when you find a fossil?
Okay. Well, first of all, I put a number on the fossil. I just have a number typed out and glued onto the fossil. And then I record it on the index card, the number of where I found it and where in the collection it's located at and what it is and the site. I have all the sites numbered, and I have the site there too. And then I have a catalog or a thing on my computer listing all the different sites that I've been to, and that has the reference information on there and how to get there and information about the site itself and everything. And so I don't have 18,000 cards because some of the cards have more than one number on them, but I do have a fair number of index cards. And then I went through a couple of years ago, I thought, well, it'd be a good idea to come up with a log book. So I wrote down the numbers in a log book because if somebody found a fossil on the floor or something with a number on it, they had no idea what it was. So they can look it up in the log book, which would direct them to the card file where they would find more information. And at that point, I realized over the years I'd used more than one numbering system. So a couple of times, some of the numbers are used more than once. But I think the people at the university know enough about fossils that they can tell one from the other. But anyway, that was my last big project. And so the University of Adrian said that was very important in doing that because so many collections end up being tossed away because, you know, they're not backed up by a catalog.
So I know with 18,000 fossils in your collection, this may be a really difficult question, but do you have a favorite find?
Oh, yeah. Years ago, I wanted some Cambrian fossils. I was fascinated by the Cambrian age, really old stuff. And so I was headed up to Minnesota. And I saw a little side road, so I pulled in there, and there was a pit. And I got out and asked the owners if I could look around and started finding Cambrian fossils. And then I realized I was still in Iowa. I was just below the Upper Iowa River, so I was actually finding Iowa Cambrian fossils. And I'm just fascinated by these things because they're like 490 million years old. And they come on the heels of what they call the Cambrian explosion, which is a big worldwide event where many of the life forms we know today first started appearing. And it's just fascinating to read this and to see documentaries on it and actually be able to put my hands on that stuff right here in Iowa, that it was going on right here in Iowa at that time, too. And so that's one of my favorites.
Why did you decide it was time to donate your collection?
Okay. Well, I had a bunch of 250 boxes of stuff in the garage, and then the catalog collection was all in the basement. and at my mom's house. And then when my mom passed away earlier this year, family decided it was time to get rid of the house. And so my wife and I moved into an apartment, and we worked on selling the house. And you don't have room for that many fossils in a two-bedroom apartment. So I thought, well, it was time to get rid of them. I had always planned on donating a little bit at a time to schools and universities and stuff, but this happened so quickly that I just thought, well, I'd get rid of the whole bunch at the same time. And I knew the university already had a big collection, and I figured that they'd probably be the best ones that'd be able to handle it and use it, you know, put it to good use.
I'm so sorry for your loss of your mother. Has it been painful to donate this collection as well? I mean, this has been such a big part of your life for so long.
Yeah. The whole process has been painful. You know, donating the collection and going down to the basement and seeing the bare walls in the basement and the bare garage, and I've given up a lot of things. You know, giving up the house and moving into an apartment, I had to give up a pet, and so yeah, it's difficult. But now I'm sitting here trying to figure out what to do with the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So I'm probably not going to get into fossil collecting again, but I'm still, you know, share information and stuff through Facebook. And Facebook has really changed the hobby a lot. So I can really find information and get into contact with other collectors all over the world. So, yes, it's been kind of difficult. So.
Well, I'm sorry it's been so hard. And we're going to take a short break, Robert. Stay with us. And in just a moment, we're going to find out what the future holds for this incredible collection that you've created. And that's a pretty exciting part. Robert Wolf is an author and a self-taught geologist who lives in Fort Dodge, Iowa. He just donated his collection of fossils, 18,000 specimens, to the University of Iowa. And in a moment, Tiffany Adrain will join us, collections manager for the Paleontology Repository at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll find out about the new podcast, Mid-Americana, Stories from a Changing Midwest. But right now, we're talking about fossils. Speaking of a changing Midwest over many, many centuries, Robert Wolf is here with us. He has been collecting fossils since he was in fourth grade. And over the last 55 years, he amassed a huge collection, which he has now donated to the University of Iowa, 18,000 specimens. And with us also is the recipient of these 18,000 specimens, Tiffany Adrain, collections manager for the Paleontology Repository at the University of Iowa. Tiffany, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for inviting me on, Charity.
So just briefly, tell us a little bit about the Paleontology Repository at the University of Iowa. This is a part of the university a lot of people don't know very much about.
Right, yes, even people that I work with in the same building are sometimes surprised to realize that they work alongside a collection that includes over 1 million fossils from all over the world, all different geologic ages. And so you can see some of the material on display at the Museum of Natural History on the campus, but the mass of the collection is in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences.
Wow. And so over 1 million specimens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many of you are involved in managing and cataloging and studying all of these specimens?
Currently, I'm the only full-time permanent member of staff, but I have an absolute army of undergraduates and graduate students. So I really couldn't do half the stuff that I do without
right.
them. You know, they're my really good team. And the collection that we have is, it was begun in the 1850s and 60s, so it's quite an old collection. You know, the origins of it are quite old, but we keep getting more and more material in, you know, all the way through the last 160 years or so. It's continued to build, so it's that's why it's such a big collection.
Now, a lot of people have collected fossils as hobbies, not very many as intensely as,
right.
as Robert right. has done.
All
right. But this collection, I mean, you don't just accept anybody's collection. What makes Robert's collection special?
Well, when we're considering a donation, a possible donation, we actually have something called a scope of collection. So we have goals and aims for our collection and what we will collect. So we don't just take everything and anything. That's because we've only got limited space and limited resources. So when Robert got a hold of me and asked, you know, said that he would like to donate his collection, I sent him a very long, complicated form which he had to fill in. Thank you, Robert. And it checked a lot of our boxes. It was a lot of Midwest material, the type of material that we're interested in, and it was really well documented. And the documentation of the collection is the thing that is just as important as the fossils themselves.
Yeah, Robert was describing his documenting process, and that must be somewhat rare among donations like this to have a collection so extensively documented.
Right. So, you know, a lot of the time people just have it in their heads. They remember where they found the material, or they recognize where the material came from. Sometimes they might have labels that are with the specimens themselves, but if those have been left, you know, if they've been stored in basements or attics or garages or sheds or whatever over time, a long period of time, if they've not really been looked after continuously the entire time, then you find that pests such as silverfish, cockroaches, mice even might actually eat the information that goes with the collections. So Robert's really looked after his collection. He's numbered every one of the processed specimens. There's a lot of material that's, as he said, that's still unprocessed. So we don't know what treasures are in those boxes. But we know where that material is from. And he has all the information available safely stored on his cards and in his catalogues. So that's what makes that collection really special.
So 300 boxes from Robert. How do you start to look into these?
Well, so it's a process. You know, I've got a lot of other stuff that goes on in the collections as well, which I can tell you about. It's something that we would make a special project. So for this one in particular, we are going to apply for grant funding from the National Science Foundation to provide storage for this collection, because at the moment it's in cardboard boxes on open shelves. And we want the proper museum standard cabinets to protect it. And we'll need a little tray for every single one of those 18,000 specimens plus. So that will be part of the grant proposal, would be curating the collection. So for curating it, Robert's actually done a lot of the work for putting the numbers on the specimens, but we'll have to put our numbers on the specimens as well. So obviously, with a million specimens, Robert mentioned that he doubled up on some numbers, but we'll be putting our own numbers on that, and then also copying his information into our database.
So what is the purpose of your collection? Now you've incorporated this large collection into this million specimens more than you have. What kind of research do you do?
So I'm like the librarian of fossils myself. So my job is actually to look after the collection, organise it, document it, get it online so that it's accessible to anybody in the world to come and do research on it. So the main purpose of the collection is a research collection. And it also supports the teaching of the University of Iowa and public outreach in the way of we might do school visits, we'll do events at activities, events and stuff like that. But the main purpose of it is that researchers anywhere in the world can come and look at our material or borrow our material and do their scientific research on it. So for most museums and collections like this, we're part of a larger collection, if you see what I mean. We're a small part, even though we've got over a million fossils, of a much larger database of fossil material worldwide. So, yeah, Robert's going to contribute to that, the resolution of that picture of the fossils.
Absolutely. And I've got to imagine that the information age has really transformed what kind of research can be done in the field of paleontology. As you said, you can catalog all of these. So researchers all over the world who are looking for something very specific can find it with you?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we've got about 147,000 of our specimens are actually catalogued. So we've got a lot of work to do on that. And so once that's online, people can see, in some cases with a photograph, probably not all 147,000 of them photographed, but in most cases, they'll at least know what type, what species we've got, what rocks, what rock units we've got fossils from, if they're interested in that type of thing, what type of fossils we have. So whether they're interested in brachiopod seashells or trilobites or crinoids or any of the you know, different types of fossils, then those specialists will come and look at our collections. But also, because the collection, as I said, is quite you know, started quite a long time ago, there's also a lot of material that hasn't yet been catalogued, which as we go through, may be something surprising, a new species. People are always finding new species in museum collections. So once you start getting that material out there, then there's more to be discovered of life on Earth, basically.
I think, you know, when people think about fossil hunting, the exciting part is getting out there and finding something on the ground. But it sounds like you're doing your own kind of hunting.
Yeah, so, you know, I know there's a lot of material that already has a name on it, so that's great. And so if people are looking for a certain type of fossil, I can sort of put them in that direction. But there's an awful lot of material that doesn't have a name on it, and that's probably, you know, even more exciting, because some things you can't identify. They're not completely preserved enough that you can put a name on them. But there are, you know, there's going to be plenty of stuff in the collections that somebody at some point can, you know, describe a new species from.
Wow. Yeah. I'm talking with Tiffany Adrain, Collections Manager for the Paleontology Repository at the University of Iowa. Robert Wolf is also here, an author and self-taught geologist from Fort Dodge, who just donated 18,000 fossil specimens. And Robert, as difficult as giving up your collection has been, I mean, listening to Tiffany talk about the future, that must be very exciting. How does that feel? Robert, are you still there?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, yeah. It's very exciting. I think I found a really good home for it and put it to good use and things like that. And just listening to Tiffany explain how they're going to use a collection, I'm really glad that it's not going to be disposed of like so many uncatalogued specimens are, and that they'll put it to good use, and it makes giving up the collection a whole lot easier.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. And I mean, Tiffany, you get a lot of collections from a lot of different people, from other researchers, from individuals. This must be a really interesting part of your work.
Yes, it is. So we can't purchase fossils. So I always say to people, I can't give you any money, but I can give you immortality in your, you know, having a named collection. So Robert's collection will be the Robert Wolf collection. And I'm hoping, Robert, that you'll be able to help me a little bit with the curation of it too. you know, that I like the stories, the anecdotes behind collecting, the conditions in which material was collected, is just as interesting as the specimens themselves to me. I like the stories behind the collections too. And then also it really helps if you have the collector available in case there's a question about the interpretation of the data, even reading somebody's writing sometimes, you know, it can be a bit ambiguous what the catalogue card says, that type of thing. So I'm really pleased that I've still got Robert here to be able to help me.
Yeah, Robert, it sounds like your work is not entirely done. That sounds like that could be a lot of fun in the future.
Right, yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, it looks like I'll probably be setting eyes on some of those specimens again sometime.
I think so. I think a trip to Iowa City is in order in the near future.
Tiffany, you must hear from a lot of people who have collections and would like to give you their collections. I'm getting the sense that you often have to say no. So what's your advice for fossil hunters if they want to not just hunt fossils, but create something that could be used for research someday?
Well, you know, even if you're in the state of Iowa, you don't have to donate to the University of Iowa. I love to have collections, of course, but most universities and museums, well, all of them should have this the goals of their collecting. So it may be that if you've collected in other places from Iowa than Iowa, then other institutions might be interested in half of the collection, you know, part of the collection, whatever's relevant to the various institutions. Documenting the collection is the most important thing to do. We have to know where everything's from, what rock unit it's come out of, where it was collected geographically. So we really need that type of information. And it's a real shame when we get collections and they just, the beautiful specimens, but we really don't know where they're from. So it doesn't, you know, we can't use them in research. We might be able to put some of them on display or take them to various events for sort of demonstrations and stuff like that. But the real meat of it is in the research. And we need the data with the specimens for that.
Robert, do you have advice for other people who might want to go fossil hunting, a way to get started?
Yeah, that's the advice I give people. Every time I give a program or something, I tell people to start numbering your specimens because, you know, we may have a dozen or two and you can remember where they're from and things, but when you start getting into thousands of specimens or so, it's hard to remember where everything was from.
Yes.
And someday somebody else is going to end up with that collection, and they're not going to know anything unless you have it well documented. So that's the number one thing I tell people. And another thing is to respect private property. You can't collect in state parks, and you can't go out into some farm field and start collecting. And usually along road right-of-ways is okay and things, but just respect private property too.
I was just going to ask you about that, some of the rules that you need to follow when you are out collecting, because a lot of us spend a lot of time hiking in state parks. We see some really cool things, but it's not okay just to put it in your pocket, right?
Right. That's not okay. Especially at the Devonian Fossil Gorge on Iowa City. That's another area that you cannot collect in. And I understand that. I mean, some of these public areas, they have to be preserved, you know, for future generations.
When you get some publicity, Tiffany, about a collection like this one, then do you get inundated with personal collectors for a little while? Do a lot of people contact you?
So mostly it's people who found an interesting fossil and want to have it identified.
Okay.
And sometimes I can identify it by just looking at a picture of it. Sometimes I'm really stumped. So if anybody has sent me an email and I have not responded, it's because I don't know what your specimen is. I'm still working on it, you know. So, but Robert brought up a good, you know, good point about where to collect fossils. And there is a really good place in Iowa, the Rockford Fossil and Prairie Park, where you can go along. It's free. The fossils, they're tiny fossils, but they are littered all over the ground. It's really easy to pick them up. So if you want a nice day out, you know, just sitting around looking at tiny little seashells, snails, that type of stuff, then that's your place to go. Another thing you can do is to join a fossil club, local fossil club, because sometimes that can get you entry into quarries. And it's very difficult to get into a quarry, you know, if you're just starting up. And quarries, of course, are where the rocks are freshly exposed, so you can often get some really good stuff there.
All right. And if you get in touch with whoever owns the quarry, they might just be willing to let you spend time there, right?
Yes, or they can put you in touch with a local club that is allowed to come in. Yeah.
So you are not part of the Natural History Museum at the University of Iowa. A lot of people just assume
that's right.
That
yes,
you are.
Sometimes it can be a bit confusing. We should have been part of the Museum of Natural History, but there was some just quirk of fate when McBride Hall was built, where the Museum of Natural History is. The university library had burnt down, so they needed somewhere to store the books temporarily. So they used the space that would have been where the fossils would have gone, and we never got to go in there and join up, you know, stay in with the Museum of Natural History. So we're like sisters, our two collections there. So
now there is an opportunity for fossil lovers to interact with the fossil experts and learn more about the collection coming up in the spring, right?
That's right. So I mentioned fossil clubs, and excuse me, there's a big one called the Mid-America Paleontology Society, and they have meetings In the fall and the spring, actually in Trowbridge Hall, the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences, and they always have a guest speaker, and anybody's welcome to come along to that. They have a website, midamericapaleo.org, and the show is, they have a fossil expo every year that, coming up in 2020. It's April 17th to April 19th, and it's at Sharpless Auction Facility in Iowa City. It's great. If you like to buy fossils, you can buy fossils. I don't buy or sell fossils, obviously, because I'm in a collection. But we always go along and do some sort of fun activity.
So a great opportunity to learn a whole lot more. Tiffany Adrain, thank you.
Thank you.
And Robert Wolf, thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
We've been talking about Robert Wolf's fossil collection.